Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, you may press star followed by the number one if you wish to ask a question. This conference is also being recorded. If you have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. I'll now turn the conference over to Lauren Gaches. Thank you, and please begin.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the announcement of NOAA's Spring Outlook and Flood Risk for this year. My name is Lauren Gaches, and I'm the media contact for the Spring Outlook. You can reach me by email at laurengaches@noaa.gov and by phone at 202-740-8314. The news release and maps related to today's announcement should now be available on noaa.gov. The Spring Outlook is part of a suite of weather and climate tools that NOAA provides emergency managers, water managers, state and local officials, and the public to help them prepare and make decisions to protect life and property. Given the recent weather with repeat nor'easters, ongoing drought across parts of the country, and flooding in others, it is important to prepare our communities for the variety of weather spring can deliver. The U.S. Spring Outlook includes the flood risk, temperature and precipitation prediction, and an outlook for drought for April through June of this year. Empowering people with the information they need to protect life and property is key to NOAA's effort to build a more weather-ready nation. Today's media teleconference will begin with remarks from NOAA experts for about 15 minutes, and then we'll take questions from reporters. The NOAA experts with me today to talk about the Spring Outlook are John Gottschalk from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in College Park, Maryland. John will describe the temperature and precipitation outlook. We're also joined by Dr. Tom Graziano, the director of NOAA's Office of Water Prediction from the National Water Center in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Tom will deliver the flood risk for this year. And David Miskis from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center will also talk about the spring drought outlook. I will turn it over to John.
Thank you, Lauren. The U.S. experienced La Nina conditions once again this past winter, and we currently remain technically under a La Nina advisory. Many areas across the U.S. did receive typical La Nina impacts this past winter, and the result of these impacts do also contribute in part to the spring outlook. Warmer than normal temperatures were observed for much of the west, the southern tier of the U.S., and for the east coast this past winter, while below normal temperatures occurred across the north central portion of the contiguous U.S. Above-average precipitation for the Northern Rockies and parts of the Great Lakes, Ohio Valley, and Tennessee Valley contributed to current above-average snowpack and soil moisture, respectively. Drought conditions expanded and intensified during the winter as a result of observed below-average precipitation for many areas of the Southwest, Southern Plains, and extreme Southeast. Ongoing La Nina conditions are anticipated to decay as equatorial Pacific Ocean temperatures continue to warm, and a transition to ENSO neutral conditions is forecast over the coming months, with ENSO neutral conditions favored through the summer. Through June, the temperature outlook favors above normal temperatures for the southern two-thirds of the continental United States, extending from southern Oregon and California across the central plains into the Great Lakes and Northeast, as well as south to Florida. The greatest odds for above normal temperatures exist for the southwest and southern plains, the Gulf Coast, northern Florida, and along the Georgia and South Carolina coast. Less elevated probabilities of above-normal temperatures extend up the East Coast and into the Northeast. Above-normal temperatures are also most likely for the northern two-thirds of Alaska. The northern Rockies is the only region leaning towards below-normal temperatures this spring at the current time. For precipitation, there is an enhanced likelihood of below-average precipitation across much of the West and South, extending from Oregon and California to the South Central Plains, including Texas and parts of Oklahoma, where drought is currently impacting the region. Below-average precipitation is also favored for a smaller area across the south coast of Alaska. We are anticipating wetter-than-average conditions for much of the northern U.S., extending from the northern high plains across to the Great Lakes and Ohio Valley, eastward to include the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, as well as for northern Alaska. Equal chances are forecast in areas where climatological probabilities are indicated for seasonal mean temperatures and seasonal accumulated precipitation amounts. At this point, I will turn the call over to Tom.
Thank you, John. Our analysis of flood risk and water supply for spring 2018 integrates late summer and fall precipitation, frost depth, soil saturation level, stream flow, snowpack, air temperature, and the rate of snowmelt. A network of 122 weather forecast offices and 13 river forecast centers across the nation assess this risk and identify areas that are likely to exceed major, moderate, or minor flooding this spring. Heavy rainfall from mid-February through early March brought moderate to major flooding across much of the middle to lower Mississippi and Ohio River basins, with record flooding observed in the Great Lakes drainages in northeast Illinois, northern Indiana, and southwest Michigan. Significant flooding continues in the middle to lower Mississippi Valley, with major flooding currently observed or forecast at multiple locations from Arkansas to Louisiana. Impacts in these areas are being mitigated by local levee systems and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers operations of the Bonnecary Spillway, whose gates are open for only the third time this decade. It should be noted that where rivers have recently crested and flooding has receded, stream flow and soil moisture are well above normal, increasing the risk of flooding from heavy rainfall, typical of the spring season. As a result, it is expected that additional rivers in the lower Mississippi River Basin, the Ohio River Basin, the Illinois River Basin, and in parts of the lower Missouri River Basin are likely to exceed moderate flood levels in the coming months. Runoff from a much above normal snowpack in the northern Rockies may lead to rivers exceeding minor flooding on the tributaries of the Columbia River, including the Snake and the Pendoral Basins, as well as drainages in the upper Missouri River Basin. Though snowpack is generally shallow, there is an increased possibility of minor flooding across much of the upper Mississippi River Valley, where frozen ground could cause increased runoff rates from heavy rains typical of the spring. Minor flooding is also anticipated along and in the drainages of the Red River of the North. In the southeast United States, possible heavy rainfall would also be expected to cause rivers to exceed minor flooding in parts of the Florida Panhandle, northern Alabama, and Georgia. Additionally, heavy rainfall, or the combination of heavy rainfall and rapid melt of heavy snowfall from the recent series of nor'easters, could also lead to minor to moderate flooding in isolated basins across the mid-Atlantic and northeast. The Alaska Spring Ice Breakup flood potential in the Tanani River Valley is currently rated as above average. The Central Yukon River, the Koyuka River, the Copper River, and the North Slope are rated as slightly above average in terms of flood potential. In the rest of the state, however, flood potential is rated as average or below average. This forecast for Alaska is based upon observed snowpack, ice thickness reports, and long-range temperature forecasts. It is important to note that heavy rainfall at any time can lead to flooding, even in areas where the overall risk is considered low. Nearly every day, flooding occurs somewhere in the United States or its territories. Flooding can cause more damage than any other weather-related event, with an annual average direct damage impact of $8 billion a year over the last 40 years. Flooding is also one of America's most underrated killers, causing nearly 100 fatalities per year, roughly half of which occur in vehicles. And remember that flowing water can be particularly powerful and dangerous, with just 6 inches of water able to sweep a person off their feet and 2 feet of rushing water able to carry a mid-sized automobile downstream. No vehicle should ever attempt to cross a flooded roadway, and drivers are reminded to turn around, don't drown. Be prepared. Every American should know their flood risk and what to do before, during, and after a flood event. This information is available at www.ready.gov/floods. To remain apprised of your current flood risk, visit weather.gov for the latest official watches and warnings. For detailed hydrologic conditions and forecasts, please go to water.weather.gov. I will now turn the call back over to Dave Miskus from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center.
Thank you, Tom. A bit more than a quarter of the country currently is in drought. During late January and February, we saw drought worsen over much of California, the Great Basin, portions of the Four Corners region, the Central and Southern Plains, the Middle Mississippi Valley, and parts of the Southeast. The current U.S. seasonal drought outlook calls for drought to persist across many areas west of the Continental Divide. Despite recent precipitation, a dry and mild 2017-18 water year in the Southwest, California, and Great Basin has led to low mountain snowpacks. The March surplus precipitation and subnormal temperatures most likely will not be enough to show improvement in Oregon and California, where drought is forecast to persist, but should be enough to temper widespread drought development there by late June. Most forecast tools in precipitation climatology favor drought persistence over the southern half of the High Plains region, including the Four Corners area. The panhandle of Oklahoma and northern Texas are currently experiencing D3 drought, according to the current drought monitor, including a concentrated area of D4 drought, the worst category for drought, in northwestern Oklahoma. This area has been experiencing drought since late November 2017. Farther north, the outlook favors above-normal precipitation over the northern plains, supporting improvement and/or removal of drought across eastern Montana and the Dakotas. Elsewhere, recent precipitation and the expected continuation of a wet weather pattern over eastern Kansas, southern Iowa, northern Missouri, and small areas of Virginia and Maryland are forecast to have drought removal. Prospects for drought persistence and development are elevated for parts of southern Alabama and Georgia, northern Florida, and along much of the South Carolina coast. There is currently no drought in Hawaii or Puerto Rico, but an area of drought development is forecast in southern Alaska. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Dave. Before we move on to the Q&A portion of our media teleconference, I want to introduce some of the other experts we have on the call to take any questions. First is Deke Arndt, Chief of the Climate Modeling Branch at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. He can assist with questions about climate and climate statistics. Second is Brad Rippey, a meteorologist from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who can address questions related to how this spring outlook and drought may impact agriculture. Third is Ed Clark, the director of NOAA's National Water Center in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And also joining us today is David Marstad, the Assistant Administrator for Federal Insurance for FEMA, who can take questions related to flood insurance. And lastly, we're also joined by hydrologists from each of our 13 river forecast centers to provide insights into local flood risks around the country. Operator, please let our reporters know how to get into the queue to ask their questions.
Absolutely. At this time, to ask your question, to enter the queue, please press star 1 and record your name when prompted. If you need to withdraw your question, that is star 2. Once again, please press star 1 at this time if you'd like to ask a question. Please stand by for our first question. Our first question will come from Seth Bornstein from Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. Although it would help with, like, the regular climate briefings, you have the slides. It's hard to follow when you don't have slides like other ones. So for a big overall question for John is, you know, you have both the issues of drought in sort of the west and south and along the Mississippi, the flooding issues. Going into the spring, which are you more concerned about in terms of overall damage and impact and injury and deaths? And I guess for both John and, I mean, Tom and David, if you could put these, you know, sort of the drought forecast and the flood forecast in perspective of, like, let's say the last 10, 15 years, we've had some really big flood years. We've had some really big drought years. Where does this rank? I mean, this, where would you put this? Is this as bad as some of the ones, or is this sort of moderate compared to others? Because there's just no sense of scale here.
Okay. Thanks, Seth. This is John Gottschalk from Climate Prediction Center. I'll take a stab at your first part of your questions. I guess from my perspective, the dry conditions that we had during normally a replenishment time across much of the south, the southeast, the southern plains, and especially the areas in the southwest and intermountain west, where it was also considerably above average during temperature-wise during the winter. I think probably the expectation that we have for below normal precipitation continuing, and this is a result or based on residual conditions from the ongoing or decaying La Nina, as you know. There can be a lag or an extension if some of the impacts, even if the La Nina conditions in the ocean decrease. And so I think the below average precipitation forecast will make some areas, as Dave has noted here, with drought development increasing. That's probably more of the serious issue, where some of the other areas, the wet conditions, are more in a Great Lakes region and extend back to the west, and will help some of the drought conditions in the northern plains that had occurred, you know, during 2017.
Hey, Seth, this is Dave Miskus here, CPC. I'd agree with John there. I think the biggest thing, and maybe Brad Rippey can help me with this for the agriculture, is the south central plains around the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma. The winter wheat should be coming up now or getting out of dormancy, and it is bone dry there. And they're looking at maybe complete loss of the winter wheat crop in those areas right now, plus pastures. Fortunately, last winter was extremely wet across California and much of the west, and so they replenished their reservoirs and soil moisture. So this current dryness in the southern half of the western area, it could be a lot worse, but last year really helped them out a lot here. So as far as the wetness up in the northern plains, they're coming out of a drought, so it's actually good to see it wet up in that area right now, and because it was very severe last spring in the northern plains, Montana, Dakota area. So a good snowpack now and a forecast above normal precipitation, I think that's actually a good thing.
Thank you.
Brad, are you able to add anything additional on the agricultural impacts?
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody can hear first before I go on.
Sounds good.
All right, good. Yeah, Seth, you're asking a lot of questions all at once, and I would just add that impacts really, I think, depend a lot on the sector you're talking about, but specifically on agriculture. Obviously, the area that Dave Miskus highlighted is absolutely crucial, roughly the southern half of the High Plains. A lot of those areas have had not any meaningful precipitation in more than 5 months. And for some of the winter wheat, it has already run out of time. So, you know, even if rains were to arrive in the near future, it would be too late for a portion of that crop. We've got a big potential wind and wildfire type situation setting up for the next several days for that region, which could exacerbate the problem. But, getting back to your original questions, you're talking about concerns about loss of life. Drought tends not to be a big deal unless you're combining with wildfire. So, have to look at some of the flood potential areas as a concern there, and that could be better addressed by the water folks.
So, Seth, this is Tom Graziano from the National Water Center. With regard to your question about overall risk across the nation this year versus previous years, the risk overall this year is a little higher than it was last year, but perhaps not quite as great as it was in 2016. The immediate risk this year, of course, is on the lower Mississippi River. And for a little bit more detail on that threat, I'm going to turn it over right now to Jeff Graschel, our expert at the lower Mississippi River Forecast Center in Slidell. Jeff?
All right, good morning. Yeah, good morning. This is Jeff. Probably the time that we've had this current flood event that we had right now, probably the timing and stuff was maybe a little beneficial in the sense that there wasn't a lot of planning that was going on in the area for this flood event and stuff. Certainly, if we were to get another event into April and May that is at similar levels that we're currently at right now, we certainly would have more of an agricultural impact across the lower part of the Mississippi River. But the current event that we have right now just so happened to come at an early enough time that we didn't have planting going on because the temperatures were too cold and the fields were a little bit too wet and stuff. So the impacts were a little less with this event than what we would have typically had if we would have had this event into April into May.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Brian Sullivan with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Thanks. I had two quick questions for you. One is I got cut off a little bit there, so I missed some of your answers from Seth. But what is driving the above average precipitation in the northern tier there? And then secondly, overall, how would you rate the California and West snowpack? I did see some storms out there recently, but too little, too late, or how would you characterize it?
Hi, Brian. This is John from the Climate Prediction Center. With respect to your first question with the forecast of above-average precipitation kind of across the northern tier that we have highlighted there, a few reasons. One is, again, as I mentioned, with the La Nina conditions, although they are weakening rapidly, there is a residual impact even into the April, May, June period. So part of that forecast is based on wet conditions that are consistent with La Nina, but also long-term precipitation trends are actually quite high across the Northern Plains, Great Lakes, and even into the Northeast with recent data. And so both of those factors generally supported the outlook in that area. I will caution is that these probabilities are modest, so as compared to some of the temperature probabilities that may be a little higher.
This is Dave Miskus about the West now and the snowpack. Initially, last month when we put out the seasonal drought outlook for March, April, May, we didn't anticipate the heavy March precipitation that's fallen in California right now and the colder temperatures. So I actually had development through much of the West through the end of May, but with this current events going on in March right now, that was enough, like I said, to temper the development of drought across Nevada and California probably for the end of June now. It brought up the snowpack and the precipitation for the water year to date, but it's still, well, a half to one-third of normal right now for the water year. So they'll take what they can get. Fortunately, they had a very wet winter last year. Maybe the western region would like to add some more information about that right now.
Well, this is Alan at the California-Nevada River Forecast Center. And, yeah, you're right. We've had sort of a mixed bag with dry months and wet months, but mostly dry months this winter. March is turning around, and we'll probably end up above average for the month of March, just with a series of storms we have coming even into next week. But still, snow water equivalents, only about half a normal. But where precipitation is getting up to be about three-quarters of normal for this time of year for the Northern Sierra, which is a big water supply region. So definitely the storms are helping, but the carryover from last winter in terms of reservoir storage is definitely helping. Reservoirs are pretty much holding about what they can hold for this time of year for considering they still have to capture potential floodwaters from snowmelt. So definitely an improvement, but and not looking as bad as it was a month ago.
Thanks, Alan. Joe with Joe Intermill, our hydrologist in charge at the Northwest RFC. Would you like to provide similar input up for the Pacific Northwest?
Sure, Tom. I guess we kind of have a mixed bag as well. I guess across our northern tier, you could say that we're running really well as far as our snowpack right now. In fact, we have some near record amounts in the Upper Clark Fork in western Montana. As you move to the south, last year we had near record and several record flows actually in the upper middle Snake areas. This year it's a little closer to average. Upper Snake still running pretty well above normal. But in Oregon, particularly southern Oregon and eastern Oregon, snowpacks are definitely on the low end. You can see that we still have some concerns about drought, but they aren't extreme drought by any stretch of the imagination. And as always, spring rains can certainly turn things around up here. So we're really overall in pretty good shape, but there's a definite dividing line between the north and south, running about halfway through our area.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Doyle Rice with USA Today. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. Just looking ahead, I see that that the CPC for the next couple weeks is forecasting cooler than average for the bulk of the country, pretty much almost coast to coast in your 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day forecast. And then I see that the spring forecast is looking pretty mild overall coast to coast. What is it that what's going on to shift that later this month into early April? What's going to be happening up there that'll cause the shift?
Well, I mean, thanks, Doyle. This is John Gottschalk from CPC. Well, you got to remember what you're talking about are short-term climate variations that occur over a period of a few weeks. And so, yes, you're right. There will be more in the way of troughiness or troughing that's going to have colder air masses enter the country, even into the week 3 and 4 period. But and that's one of the reasons, actually, for hedging, if you will, with below normal temperatures in the northern Rockies. That's where some of that colder air that you mentioned will be entering. Another reason for that colder signal on the map is due to the above-average snowpack that was mentioned by a few folks already. But as we get later on past, the colder temperatures that will be coming in the next several weeks, we still feel we have pretty strong support from dynamical model guidance, long-term temperature trends, also dry conditions across much of the country, across the southern tier. All of those factors generally favor, on the long-term seasonal forecast perspective, that's what's important here, we're looking at 3 months, a turnaround to warmer conditions. Now, the probabilities you'll note across parts of the Ohio Valley, Tennessee Valley, and the Great Lakes are somewhat tempered. Those are related to the expectations of potentially wetter than average conditions, as noted in the precipitation outlook, plus an anomalous or a positive departure in soil moisture conditions in a relatively narrow band from the lower Mississippi Valley northeastward across the Tennessee Valley into the Ohio Valley. So those probabilities, although still for above normal, are lower. So we're looking at a change, but also looking at boundary-type conditions that will, over a three-month average period, warm things up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Zach Ziegler with Arizona Public Media. Your line is open.
Hello. Thanks for holding the call this morning. In the Southwest, spring kind of brings the start of wildfire season. Can you tell me how conditions might go for those of us that might see fire starting this time of year?
This is Dave Miskus from CPC. I guess with the current drought conditions across the Four Corners region, obviously we're much drier than normal. This winter has not been kind to the snowpack in the mountains of Arizona and New Mexico and southern Colorado, Utah. So I'd say there'd be a lot of dry conditions out there. I'm not an expert on the fire, but it's probably elevated. We'd probably let maybe someone from the Southwest Colorado River Basin might want to comment on that.
This is Paul Miller from the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center. I'm also not a fire expert, but from a water supply perspective, all of our forecasts in that area are hovering around the 30% of average or 30% of median level. We've just seen very dry conditions to date. Water year precipitation has been well below normal throughout the Southwest. All of that contributes to an increased fire risk and danger. But I can follow up on any of those numbers if you'd like.
I think that covers it pretty well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Olinger with Hilton Head Island Packet. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. Thank you guys for holding the call. I was wondering, I know that you said there was going to be drought conditions affecting the South Carolina Lowcountry, and what I was wondering is how extreme are we talking about with the drought conditions? And it says persisting. It doesn't say that it's getting worse or getting better or anything like that. So what would we be looking at in terms of drought, and then is it tied to the higher probabilities of above normal temperatures in any way that were mentioned on the call?
Yeah, this is Dave Miskus from CPC. The persistence and some development in the southern Atlantic area, year area right there, was due to kind of a dry winter in that area. It's kind of missed out on the heavier precipitation that's fallen further to the north and to the west. We think it'll be dry again based with the La Nina conditions, drier than normal and warmer than normal across the southern tier of states during the spring here. But it gets a little more fuzzier as you get towards the summer because you can get pop-up thunderstorms, you can get tropical systems coming in, but we think in the next month or two it'll stay dry. Actually, Florida probably will be also rather dry, but then the summer wet season around June will come in very quickly. So I'd say for the next maybe March, April, and May, it'll be drier than normal, but by June, maybe as the summer transitions and you get more thunderstorms, it will probably start decreasing. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I'm assuming that it ties into the fact that La Nina should be dissipating over those months as well.
That too.
Okay, and then just one last question, and that is now looking at the intensity, are we looking at like something like a D1? Obviously, we're not going to be doing anything like what's going on in Texas right now, obviously.
No, it'd be like D1, D2 at the worst probably right now. Like I said, and it'll probably disappear by the late spring, early summer here.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much for taking the time to answer my question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question will come from Josh Wallace with the Oklahoman. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having this. So I'm kind of basically curious if, you know, western Oklahoma here in Oklahoma City, we typically think of it as drier than most of the state normally. But in the past few years, it seems like it's just constantly been under drought conditions. Even in 2015, when we had the wettest year on record, it still kind of was under a D1, D2 drought. So I'm just curious if you guys think this is if this is going to be status quo for the next few years, if you know this is going to continue on, and also with the wildfire risk, you know, we had our worst wildfire year last year. Is this something? I know it typically needs the fuel to burn, but are we going to be facing these kinds of odds and these kind of conditions for the next decade or so?
I'll just brief. This is Dave Miskus again from CPC. Briefly talk about the current drought conditions there. I think it actually goes back to 2011, where the whole southern plains had a very severe Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas long-term drought there. Then you had some wet years in between, like I said, 2015. But I'm not sure if the subsoil moisture ever really got replenished because you had enough dry periods come in during that period from 2011 to current right now, and it just seems you get the wind, the warmer temperatures, it just seems to dry out that area much quicker. And it's either a hit or miss out there for the western Oklahoma area right now. As far as trends, I'm going to send that over to NCEI Dee Garnett. Maybe he has some thoughts on that.
Hey, Josh. This is Deke from NCEI in Asheville, and I happen to be an Oklahoma native. So most of the long-term what we call projections in the climate system do show the southwestern part of the U.S., generally speaking, leaning more towards drier conditions overall. There are certainly seasonal and regional variations within that, but the western part of the state and West Texas are kind of on the edge of that footprint that seems to be repeated more consistently in the long-term model projections. And the physics behind that, largely Dave covered very much what's going on with the lack of a complete recovery from the 2011 and 12 episode. But the physics of kind of what drive that are basically a warmer atmosphere is a thirstier atmosphere and can pull more water out of the ground. And when you combine that with regions that are bordering on arid or semi-arid to begin with, that are tending to get less precipitation over the long term, that kind of increases the role of drought. It's nothing that I would certainly not say with certainty that we're moving into a drought era, but the pressures are pointing in that direction to the best that we can tell.
Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, as a reminder, you may press *1 to ask a question. Our next question is coming from Bryce Anderson with Progressive Farmer. Your line is open.
Hello, everyone. Thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear the comments. I had a question based on kind of relating the flood prospects to spring planting, and that has to do with the fact that there's quite a bit of the Midwest and the Delta where flooding of at least some extent is indicated for this spring. And when you combine that with the below normal temperatures that appear to be taking in quite a bit of the Corn Belt, I wonder, maybe Brad can comment on this the most, if you're thinking that we could see some slowdowns in spring planting progress for this growing season.
Hey, Bryce, this is Brad Rippey. And given the outlook, you know, the one thing that becomes pretty clear is that there's going to be a fairly dramatic gradient between wetter conditions to the north and east, and then as you move south and west towards the southern plains, certainly a warmer and drier spring signal. And while you cannot, at this early stage in mid-March, predict individual storms, it looks like the evidence is pointing towards that wetter spring, especially in some of the northern reaches of the Midwest. And given current conditions where we also have wet soils extending down into the Mid-South, that almost certainly will translate into at least local, if not regional, planting delays across parts of the Midwest and Mid-South.
Could this be on the order of some of the delays that we've seen in the last 6 to 10 years? I think of 2008 and 9 were pretty delayed. 2011 was, 13, 15, and 16, and even last year. So there have been quite a few springs recently where this has gone on.
Right. And again, you know, it's just a little bit too early to pinpoint exact locations for some of these big storms that will no doubt slow planting activities. And, I don't think you can quite come out and say it's going to be as bad as, say, a 2008 yet. But it's something we'll need to watch. And, the caveat for all this is that, I guess, you know, we have had some pretty good outcomes. We had a record corn yield last year, despite the problems that we saw in the spring. So, you don't want to get too excited about spring planting delays at this point. But in some of the worst years, and years like 83 or 95 come to mind, that can cause a big problem because if you don't have appropriate rooting, that can leave the crop, especially corn, quite vulnerable to periods of hot, dry weather from July and beyond. So it's a caution flag, but, something we'll need to watch. But you don't want to get too excited. It's only mid-March.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bryce.
Our next question is coming from Joe Cutter with Town Square Media Trenton. Your line is open.
Good. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call this morning. I have a very simple question. John or someone at your end, can you synopsize or give us some sort of thumbnail about the spring outlook or spring prediction for the northeast part of the country, which, of course, would include my state, New Jersey, as far as temperature, precipitation, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah, this is John Gottschalk here at CPC. For the spring outlook for the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, we're favoring above-average temperatures and actually also above-average precipitation from about the Mid-Atlantic region up through the Northeast, including New Jersey.
All right. How would you compare the prediction for this spring to recent past springs?
Actually, that's a very good question. Last, I took a look at that before the call, and the outlook for temperatures from this year to last year is relatively similar, with some of the differences being some of the probabilities, mainly in the southwest, and also the expectations of below normal temperatures in the northern Rockies or northern plains region. But a very similar sort of outcome, and that forecast actually did quite well overall. From the precipitation point of view, So basically last year we also favored generally above average temperatures for your part of the country, which did verify correctly. With respect to the precipitation outlook, this is somewhat different. Our precipitation forecast was for wetter than average conditions, more towards the Great Lakes and Northern Plains and along the Gulf Coast, and we didn't have enough information to specifically make a forecast for your region last year, but you did end up being on the wet side last year.
All right, John, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Our final question is coming from Joe Puma with WEEK Television Peoria. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. In your assessment for – this is basically regarding the river outlook for like central and northern Illinois. You mentioned that it's going to be wetter for the Great Lakes and additional flooding is likely across the Illinois River Valley. Can you go into that a little more in depth and talk about what we can expect here across our region?
Absolutely. I'm going to turn it over thanks for your question, Joe. We're going to turn it over to the North Central RFC, and our expert there is Mike Welver. Mike?
Hello, thank you. Yeah, we're taking a look at that area and just the fact that they have had the heavy precipitation that we had in mid-February that resulted in all the flooding in the tributary streams feeding into the Illinois River itself, resulting in quite a bit of flooding along the Illinois. Just the fact that that water is still running quite high through the river systems, and the groundwater is elevated as well as soil saturated. We're just looking at the potential for additional rainfall and such, resulting in additional flooding problems in those areas for the next month or two.
Gotcha. All right, great. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Operator, is that still our last question?
Yes, we have no further questions.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So that concludes our media teleconference today. I want to thank all of our participants who dialed in from our partner agencies at FEMA and USDA and across NOAA and at the National Water Center, National Centers for Environmental Information, and the regional river forecast centers. If there are any additional questions today, please do not hesitate to reach out to me, as we have experts on site at both our College Park location and at the National Water Center in Tuscaloosa for follow-up. Again, my email is lauren.gacious, G-A-C-H, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, at NOAA.gov, and I can be reached via phone at 202-740-8314. If you don't already have the news release with the outlook and the maps that are associated with it, they are available on NOAA.gov. Also, the audio from this call will be made available online. Thank you very much.
Once again, with that, we'll conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating, and you may disconnect your lines at this time.